Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Scrum Down NBC Sports Rugby Podcast. I am your host with the most, Alex Corbisero, and it is great to be back, everyone. Well, great to actually be back, being able to speak to everyone here, but not great news at the moment for London Irish. And as this is our season finale here on the Scrum Down, we've been covering the story for the last, you know, at least 5 weeks now as it's been evolving. And sadly, it has not ended out well. And some of our worst fears have come to fruition. If you've been following this pod, you know exactly what we're talking about. The takeover bid from the Americans that was hopefully a consortium coming in to take over the club from current owner Mick Crossan seems to have fallen through. RFU deadlines were imposed. They were not met. The club has been suspended from the Premiership, which means they will not compete in any leagues across next season. You know, London Irish were still giving out hopes and statements that, you know, potentially there's a resolution to negotiate their way out of this suspension. Would that happen? Unfortunately, that has not happened, with the club now announcing through a open letter from current owner Mick Crossan, where they announced that the club has been put into administration as of today. And that seems to be the nail in the coffin that we're all hoping wouldn't happen for London Irish. Lots to sort of unpick and talk about as the story has been developing. We've said a lot of my real thoughts and opinions across the story have been recorded on this pod. So if you haven't been listening, you please go back over these last couple episodes, re-educate yourself on what's been going on. And this episode will probably make a lot more sense for you. But to break it down, to go through it all, we have Chris Jones from the BBC. You know, he's been a massive supporter of this pod over the last, you know, number of years. He's a good friend of mine, but he's also been covering this in the UK and been on the pulse. Alex Lowe is on holiday, but to sort of break it down, to get into it, which is quite a unique special episode this week, as the majority of our chat on the Scrum Down with Chris on this topic is also going to make an appearance on Rugby Union Weekly. So you can check that out also on BBC Sports channels as well. And, you know, to get into that, we have Chris Jones. And we are joined by the returning Chris Jones from the BBC, good friend of the pod. Chris, welcome back. No Alex Lowe this week to bring bad news, but we do have some heartbreaking news to really get in to talk to, as there's been a lot of developments in these last couple of days with the London Irish story.
Yeah, it's the news that everyone feared. The deadline of last week was then pushed back, wasn't it, to Tuesday afternoon, evening, and that's UK time. And for all of us on this side of the pond, it became clear through the day that this takeover wasn't happening. The deadline wasn't going to be met. And then we just waited for kind of the hammer blow from the RFU, which came just after seven o'clock UK time. And it confirmed the worst. Irish suspended from the Premiership. And yeah, it's what everyone feared. And tell us how you feel, Corbs, because you've got skin in the game. How many years do you go back with London Irish? I imagine anyone who's got a long-standing association to the club as a player, administrator, fan, this must be a particularly bleak time.
It's heartbreaking. And I think I spent about a decade of my life at that club. At the time, the Avenue in Sunbury was, you know, its home, and what I called home for that club. And we played at Majeski Stadium out in Reading. But I just can't stop thinking of all the good memories I've had and the amazing time I've had and how much the club means to me. But I think what really is the tough part is for what those who are still there, staff, players, fans, people who've committed their sort of lives to are going through right now, and what they've really been through this last month or so of uncertainty and roller coaster. And you know, I do feel like maybe they haven't been, you know, kept in the light as much as they could have been about everything that's been going on. And that's really where it's been tough to watch those that have been personally affected that I know well and just know how much they've committed to that club.
Yeah, and it's so reminiscent, isn't it, of what we've seen at other clubs this season. I know that every club is different, and we're going to get into, aren't we, the reasons London Irish have found themselves in this situation, the reasons whilst Worcester London Irish rule no longer part of the league, and what English Club Rugby Union and what the RFU and what everyone involved in the club game and the wider English rugby game needs to do going forward. But it's those broken promises. Christian Day, General Secretary of the RPA, speaking about the human impact, but also going on you know, the BBC Today programme and saying that promises were broken. And it's that kind of constant reassurance that came over the last few months that everything was going to be okay, and it wasn't, and it isn't, and the blame game has started. It will go on, but I imagine for a lot of those players, many of whom you're no doubt still in touch with, it's feeling let down by people at the club they used to trust, and that's got to be a painful part of it.
I think that's the hardest part, is that the people internally, or the messages internally from under London Irish, were so consistently that this is all going to be sorted. It's all going to be okay. The Americans, the money, any day now. This has been going on for a while, and it's people that, you know, up until that point have trusted these people and know, you know, that they, you know, have good faith and skin in the game with them. And so they're obviously going to be loyal, stick to what they've built, stay together, keep the ranks as a playing group, which I thought they did, you know, incredibly, you know, valiantly to the end. But at the same time, now that trust has been broken, and gradually as more and more of that trust was unbroken, you were starting to see boys starting to fear the worst, and that's inevitably what happened. And I think that's what's been so frustrating, is you internally you're thinking, surely they wouldn't keep saying this now if there wasn't something concrete about to happen or about to come out. But then it just kept never coming to fruition. We were never getting names, we were never getting documents, we were never getting developments on the actual negotiation to getting to a point where it looked like a deal was imminent. And now you've had this runway hard stop enforced by the RFU and PRL, and that's left them nowhere else to try and drag this out. But at the same time, for the players, you've got to have a real bad taste in your mouth, that you want to just think about all the good stuff that you've got at this club, and how sad it is that this is all falling apart, but you also feel quite betrayed at the end of it as the way it's all unfolded.
Yeah, and there's going to be people who will say, why did the RFU put in a hard and fast, I know it got knocked back a week or so, but why were they putting in a deadline? And, you know, I think this is the legacy of the Wasps and Worcester situation, that, you know, I was there on the Premiership launch day when we didn't know whether Worcester were going to be able to fulfil their fixtures, you know, and that then threw a whole cloud over the league from the start. That cloud only got darker, thicker, more menacing when Worcester waned, then when Wasp waned. So you can understand why the RFU have done this, because they've had 5-6 months of promises about documentation they've not seen. So they've got nothing from the new consortium or from the current owners to give them any reassurance this deal is actually a thing, not just a promise, a hope, a pipe dream. And then secondly, they can't risk starting a pre-season without knowing what number of teams are in the league. You know, there has to be a line in the sand. And I know it's really, really tough, but if the takeover wasn't going through, then the other option is the current ownership sticks it out. And the current ownership, for whatever reason, and look, Mick Crossan has put out a heartfelt statement in a letter to staff, which is being circulated. He speaks of his 10 years of service and what he's done for London Irish. And there's no doubt that he has done some great things for London Irish, but this is perhaps what Tom Iluby is referring to when he talks about a model that is broken, that needs improvement, that has the game that has structural challenges. Because once Mick Crossan decided he needed to walk away from the clubs, and there are loads of reasons why that could be, with a financial, we don't know what's going on personally with Mick Crossan, whether, you know, his race is just run. And if he can't move the club onto someone else and there is no one to take it over, this is what happens. So there'll be a huge amount of animosity out there, I think, from the London Irish family towards Mick Crossan, something he has tried to mollify in his statement. But I suppose that sums up the precariousness of the club's position, that if this takeover, which always felt a bit pie in the sky, didn't go through, then it wasn't the case of, oh, Crossan's going to do another 2, 3, 5, 10 years or wait for the right owner. That was it. They're in administration.
Exactly. And I think that's probably what the real frustration is that how long this American consortium takeover was able to string along. And I think you accompany that at some point the RFU and Premiership Rugby had to give a hard out. And I honestly believe if Mick and this American consortium could actually prove like how close the deal was, I think Premiership Rugby would give him a week, 2, 3 weeks. I really think if from the outside in, without inside knowledge, that there's got to be little to no real tangible paperwork, evidence, proof of funds. What are the sticking points? Where are we at? Confirmation. We've never heard a statement from this American group. They, you know, in Mick Crossan's email references two names, I believe the NUE and Red Strike, but that's really the first time anyone's even put a name to any group or anything. And that's on the way out, as you know, this had failed. And I think that's what gave a lot of people like myself concern, and why on the Scrum Down we've been covering this for the last month or so, is that it just didn't seem to add up. It seemed like there was a potential cliff edge waiting to happen that the club was sort of trending towards. And by all means, on the internal side, it was, don't worry, everything's fine. I think, sadly, this will be probably Mick's legacy as owner of London Irish. You know, he's done a lot of good things in his tenure there. The club has, you know, reinvested in a lot of areas, from training to its academy rebuilt, to putting talent on the field, to becoming a competitive side, to building an exciting brand of rugby, to creating London Irish back to like a family feeling again, which I think it lost for a while in its sort of maybe a middle 5 year or so period. And, you know, maybe one day London Irish will be back in some form, maybe in a championship, maybe in a reboot, maybe in a revamp a la WAS, Worcester, who knows? But London Irish as it knows now, London Irish with its tangible assets such as Hazelwood, a training ground complex and all that, are probably going to be no more.
Yeah, let's pick up on that point about what the future holds in a bit. But, you know, there's so many, the press release that came out from the governing bodies, there were quotes from Bill Sweeney, the RFU chief exec, from Tom Alubi, the chair of the RFU board, from Simon Massey-Taylor, Premiership Rugby CEO, from Christian Day of the RPA. Tom Alubi's quotes sort of trying to sum up why all this has happened. COVID-19, he said, accelerated the impact of underlying structural challenges and had a major effect on PRL clubs in the RFU. Given the cost of living crisis, the post-COVID-19 bounce back has been weaker than expected. And this is the key bit from Alubi. And that has meant clubs with unsustainable business models have gone out of business, regrettably so, for players and their fans. He then talks about how rugby clubs need to have a wide-ranging offering, varied revenue streams, and how the clubs that have gone are the ones that had the especially fragile business models. He also talks about the £25 million they give to the Premiership, which is kind of a drop in the ocean for what the RFU takes in every year. That's another topic we can get onto as well. But on London Irish and on that unsustainable business model, because I remember speaking to insiders at the club, and Brentford was the future, wasn't it, Corbs? You played many times at the Medeski. 20 years, some great times, some great memories, some Paddy's Day sellouts, but ultimately the Medeski never felt like home. Brentford was coming back into London, where there's a load of fans already, cracking ground. But, and this is a key bit which has not been covered too much in various media outlets, the tenancy was going to end with Brentford. So London Irish would have found themselves as a nomadic club once more, which would have thrown up a whole number of challenges. So the brave new world of Brentford, A, was actually not going to be full term or long term. And B, what London Irish spent on salaries in order to build a squad to stay in the Premiership, to avoid going into the, quote, abyss of the Championship, to then have that long-term future at Brentford, meant they were spending a ludicrous amount of wages, caught up in this arms race that many clubs got caught up in at the back end of the 2010s, perhaps overly encouraged by the financial boom of the middle of the 2010s. You chuck in COVID, you chuck in a business model that, as Alubi outlines, is unsustainable. And actually, it is no surprise that we've got to the position we're in with a few clubs, as devastating as it is.
I agree with most of that. I think, you know, look at from a funding point of view, I think it's very clear that the RFU and Premiership Rugby need to restructure and collaborate more in a mutually benefiting way to try and make both ends of the rugby spectrum sustainable and not kind of just rely on this like Twickenham match day top tier money to sort of trickle down and fund everything and find ways that they can actually try and make this Premiership product, you know, much more viable financially. And whether that's restructuring the calendar to more meaningful games, to less rugby, to actually maybe a new model of how they share EPS players and the cost that the clubs incur for that. I do think that, you know, there's got to be change that comes out of this chapter where we have now lost three clubs in a short period of time. And it shows that at the moment, the current model is not fit for purpose. And a lot of these clubs, especially the ones that don't own their own ground, are in very, very vulnerable positions. And then I think, you know, you look at London Irish and where they're at now, you know, they're about to go into administration and, you know, their assets are going to be liquidated and creditors will be paid off. Players won't see any of that. Staff are too far down the list of what will be recurred for that to come back. And we're in this, you know, brutal position where it's all come crumbling down and it's you know, the small people that really, I think, get crushed at the bottom.
Yeah, so let's spare a moment here for all those people affected. Christian Day says more than 100 players and staff faced with uncertainty and will leave many thousands of fans this situation without their beloved club. And this takes us onto the future, because Premiership Rugby, English Rugby, can ill afford to lose London Irish, Wasps and Worcester. At the moment, they have been lost in all intents and purposes, because we don't know where Worcester are going to reemerge. Wasps were going to reemerge in the Championship. That isn't happening. And now they are sent down to the bottom of the pyramid. And London Irish, as it stands, are nowhere. But those are how many, you know, tens of thousands of fans, huge brands, for want of a better word, but I hope, you know, fans know what I mean when I say brands, you know, names that resonate, that have had people investing in them, that have had world-class players coming to their doorstep to play. So they have to come back into the English system. And what Simon Massey-Taylor says here is, we're committed to working with all stakeholders to create a professional rugby system that London Irish can re-enter at the right time. He doesn't say rugby system. He says professional rugby system. So what I expect to happen within the next, let's say, 3 to 5 years, after the dust has settled, and after hopefully the league and English rugby starts to stabilise post this period, there is a chance for a London Irish Wasps or Worcester to reapply for their professional status as a kind of quasi-franchise coming into what I hope by then is a vibrant second tier that is supporting this slimline 10-team league. Because if they are going to go to 10, it's got to have a strong second tier for that kind of promotion and relegation. So I feel out of this time of darkness, there is some light, because I think things are going to be put in place that in 5 years' time, the league and English rugby might be able to thrive. But it's absolutely crucial that all the things Premiership Rugby is speaking about, a sporting commission, financial regulation, a professional game agreement with the RPA, RFU, they're saying is now going to be a partnership and not just a cash for access thing. Get all that in place. And you, I do feel there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
I do feel that those things are, you know, beyond necessary. And I think it's, you know, some people might say hindsight, but to me, it's crazy that it was allowed to get to this point, to get this bad, to be this unregulated, for now the lights to truly come on across the board that we need to address this issue. And I do think it's a no-brainer that all this stuff needs to happen. But I still think back to, you know, comments in Parliament about being asleep at the wheel, to all of these things that, you know, these things have been snowballing for a while. They don't just happen overnight. That is one of the biggest issues. And the fact that, like, the RFU couldn't force any sort of financial disclosures from the group in the negotiations to get this thing across the line, to me, was always mind-blowing. That, you know, the RFU are putting deadlines in, there's all these regulations, and there's actually, you know, from the club itself, they don't have any transparency, have to show anything. It's all internalized and really, like, separate individual businesses, and that's why this has just gone on for so long.
Yeah, and I think it's difficult when we talk about this, the takeover, because we don't really know how valid the takeover was, or whether it was a legitimate takeover or anything. You know, there were positive noises, but there were positive noises at the time of Worcester's demise and positive noises at the time of Wasp's demise. So, look, the governance in the game has to be improved. We know that. You don't get to a situation like we've got with three clubs going without there being issues. Do I blame necessarily the RFU and the Premiership Rugby in this particular instance for their you know, the deadlines they put in place and their kind of desire to have some kind of reassurance and proper stuff in place to get some long-term viability of London Irish after what happened to Wasp and Worcester? You can't really blame them. I kind of think in the Mick Cross and letter, there's a bit of having cake and eating, isn't there? They're saying, oh, the deadline was imposed on us, but also we need stronger leadership. I think this was the kind of definitive leadership that people were maybe wanting for Wasp and Worcester, because if we had our time again, Worcester wouldn't have started the Premiership, would they? Because it then made a mockery of the whole competition to have schedules being redone through the season and games scrapped and results expunged. So, look, I think that's a kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't situation. I do think quotes like the one from Elube Corp saying, we currently contribute £25 million to the Premiership each year, but cannot continue to invest in failing business models. I take his point. They don't want to throw good money after bad. But they've got to stop even talking about this, we give you money, because the Prem provide the players and train the players and coach the players and develop the players to then play for England. Those words are not words of a partnership. Now, maybe I'm, you know, taking them out of context, and Lube actually means, right, we're going to keep investing, but we're going to make sure the models are right. Great. And if that's the case, brilliant. But with the new PGA, and I keep hearing from all the power brokers, this is about a partnership. But a partnership doesn't say things like, oh, we're giving money here and we don't think it's going in the right way. The Premiership and funding the Premiership has to be a huge priority for the RFU. Surely. Because that then contributes to a strong England team, which then contributes to a strong England game across the whole piece.
I agree. I don't think either can exist without each other. And that's really the truth. And, you know, just big picture, what we're talking about London Irish, like, Yeah, there's so much blame to go around for this whole situation. There's no way that RFU and Premiership Rugby can wipe their hands of this and blame it all on Mick. And there's no way Mick can and do the same and push it all back on them. There's multiple failures across the board here. And then when you look at Premiership Rugby and that RFU model, this is part of the issue, mate. Like, you know, they are so intertwined, those two, and how they coexist with each other, how they benefit each other. It's madness to sort of have one thinking they're giving handouts to the other, and then the other feeling either subservient or feeling, you know, ungrateful because they're the ones providing all the players on the field, the, you know, running the academies to community programs, to everything else that all these Premiership clubs pick up, which, you know, coexist and co-benefit with the RFU. It's a no-brainer that this relationship needs to be restructured, and there's got to be some give and take from both sides to get to a place where we can actually, you know, support the ecosystem and the structures in place in a much, much better way.
This is what's coming in, a sporting commission. And this was kind of Martin Phillips and Simon Massey-Taylor, who are the chair and the CEO of Prem Rugby. They've been speaking about this for a while. So this is not completely knee-jerk, but it's all this stuff is being accelerated by the situation that's present at the moment. A sporting commission, which is going to have a former England captain on it. Financial regulation, a body that is going to be able to have much more power of regulating and looking into club finances. And then a professional game agreement that hopefully we'll see genuine collaboration with the RFU and then in the process kind of set up a strong second tier that in the fullness of time London Irish Wasps and Worcester can go into. There are so many other things that need to go in place, but something that I thought was really interesting was listening to Ed Griffiths, the former Sarri's chief exec, former chairman of Bath. He was on the Today programme last week, and Griffiths splits opinion because, you know, his role with Saracens and everything, but no doubt the guy knows rugby governance. And he said there is 100% enough money that comes into English rugby every year in whatever way, TV deal, Twickenham tickets, sponsorship, whatever. There is enough money to have a successful England team and a thriving professional game, as well as then a buoyant community game. I think it's a cop out to go, there's not enough money in rugby. I don't think that's true. What it is about is trying to take that money and work out where it goes and make sure that everyone, and that includes the second tier championship, and that includes the premiership, and includes the England team, and includes the Red Roses, and includes the age grades, everyone has a commensurate slice of the pie. So if you're the RFU, you have to, I suppose, get into the mindset of thinking, we're not competing with the premiership at any time. Every single person that comes to Twickenham, that's money that could be used on every part of the game in England. And I do think there are the right people in the room at the moment to try and make this happen. But it's going to take an unprecedented level of club country collaboration in order to get English rugby back on an even keel. And it has to happen now, yesterday, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's no probably coincidence that maybe English rugby has taken a bit of a knock, you know, on the top level of the field. And then you've got some of these issues off the field. And I think they do coincide. I know the product from a premiership has been incredible, but the system's always been flawed. And I think it's really only been the allowed success and the way that it's been allowed to just kind of survive that way and just be enough to keep going. England really, I think, have benefited just from the sheer size of their player pool and the amount of English qualified players in the Premiership that they've been able to sort of, this model has been able to survive. But at some point, to me, it was inevitable that it was going to continue to detract from the top tier of England and where they want to be structurally, control of players, time together, all the different things that impact being an England coach that maybe some other international countries don't have to deal with. And at the same time, you know, you've got these issues where there's major, major failings off the field and major, major system and lack of collaboration, which I think the two are definitely coincidental, not and connected, yes.
Mm. Thoughts on a 10-team league? I mean, it's happening. We got it's not something that we could particularly, you know, argue whether it should or shouldn't. It is happening. Can you see the benefits of it?
I guess so, and I guess not. Like, what, one or two? So we're talking, what, 4 to 6 more games or not a year? It's probably from where we were to where we are now. I understand it. I do think Premiership rugby season has to be shorter. I think they've got to fit in tighter windows. I think there's potential upsides to it. But I really think a 10-team league only works with a viable league underneath where there's realistic chance of another team coming up or a team coming down or however they want to structure it. Otherwise, they're going to ring fence at 10. And I think that's probably around the bare minimum of what you can operate at in a league. And it'd be interesting if it keeps continuing to drop, sadly, and what would they do then?
Can't go below 10. That's absolutely, I mean, it's ideally it wouldn't have gone below any number.
That's what I mean. So then what do you do if another club hits rocky waters? What happens? We just keep going to 9? We go 9, then 8? Like, there's got to be some sort of restructuring here.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. This is the line in the sand. This is the start of the new era, and it shouldn't have come to this. And it should have been that if they wanted to go to 10, say they wanted to go to 10 because they've gone, right, let's have a system where every game matters. Not that it doesn't before, but, you know, I'm sure people could take my point that there's no overlap with the international game. There's no Prem rugby on the same day as England, Wales and the Six Nations. There's a bit more time for recovery. And then when the internationals are going on, you have a really cool cup system playing against the championship sides, which gives your fringe players and your squad players a chance to get some rugby. Then they work on a situation or system where the players who don't get a load of rugby can you know, play in level 3 or in the championship. So I can definitely see the argument for a slightly more slimlined league, but that then had to have the 3 teams that were dropping out of it going down on rugby grounds and offering all of their, I don't know, history, experience, fan base, their clout to that second tier. So the fact that that isn't happening is a disaster, and that's why I'm convinced there will be a plan where if they want to and if they can, London Irish, Worcester and Wasps can return if they prove they're viable into that second tier. But the fundamentals of a 10-team league, I think, would work, but it is then dependent on an excellent TV deal, perhaps a shared TV deal with the second tier. Again, that could be a few years down the line. A cup competition for internationals, no international overlap. But you're right. I mean, anything below 10 then becomes... 10's right on the edge, isn't it, of a viable number for a top-level competition.
And I think the other issue you got to address is like the Premiership Academy systems and what, like, the hole that London Irish will leave with what they've been doing, developing talent in the area. The Academy is honestly one of the best in the Premiership. They have strong encatchment area, which they benefited a bit from Wasps leaving London, which opened up, I think, Middlesex to them even more, which now all their encatchment area, who takes over that? Are Harlequins... Harlequins must just be laughing. I'm assuming that they have that encatchment now. How is that going to work? Do Ealing step up? Where does it all go? Because they're going to have to fill that void of development somewhere, because otherwise you're going to have all these players that are being funneled towards the top tier of the system, which now just stops immediately with no certainty of how or when or if it can continue.
And then the other elephant in the room is CVC, who own, what, 27% of the league? I mean, that deal came at a time when everyone thought, right, this is the next step, the new era. Then COVID hits, the business models are exposed, this happens. CVC, we hear nothing from. We hear lots of positive noises behind the scenes about the way they're bringing people together, but that now needs to be tangible. You know, if this is going to be a new era, in very sad circumstances, but it has to be, then CVC, we need to work out what they're doing in rugby and where they're going to take it, because this is probably the worst time post-COVID for clubs to be giving away some of their central revenues. So it's an absolute non-negotiable now that whether it's a TV deal, whether it's sponsorship, whatever it might be, that central revenue pot stabilizes and then starts to grow, admittedly in a tough economic situation.
This is the tough thing about the CVC is, you know, in the short sighting of when it was done and what was going on, you know, that influx of cash seemed necessary to keep these unsustainable business models and clubs afloat. But then without the unforeseen, without being able to foresee that COVID was going to happen, clubs thinking they just re-up their armaments of cash revenues ended up having to pour those out, add more debt to them with government loans to keep going during a pandemic. And then that you know, in the short term, that money seemed, you know, necessary, kept COVID things afloat, more government loans were added on. But then in the long term, in the big picture, it's kind of a kiss of death, because now you've got these clubs still with an unsustainable business model that didn't get to use that injection of cash really to restructure financially and put themselves in the advantageous position they thought it would, who now have to give up, because they took that money in at the time, a considerable amount of their commercial revenue, where deals aren't quadrupling, doubling, tripling, as maybe one would hope, from renegotiations, from, you know, TV rights deals to commercial models to everything. And that now has put these clubs in a disadvantageous position, even though the CVC deal at the time seemed like it could be something very, very solid for the league.
Yeah, I mean, it's a deal that's, as we speak now, really aged terribly, hasn't it? With the timing and with COVID and with, as you say, Corbs, outlined perfectly, like the way it plugged gaps rather than, you know, was that extra 10, 15 million quid to do build some infrastructure or do something brave to build those revenue streams that Tom Aluba is talking about, so clubs can have 2, 3, 4, 5 revenue streams. They're not just reliant on, you know, tickets through the turnstiles and TV money. So yeah, we'll see what comes to pass on that front. But yeah, certainly the CVC money was just used in the wrong way, in inverted commas, because that's not what it was intended for. And then we'll see if the government budges on these COVID loans, because that's another kind of financial noose around the neck. So, yeah, there's so much to get through. It is such a difficult time. There'll be plenty coming out, I think, from the Premiership over the coming days and weeks about what they're doing. We've already heard about the plans to reboot the league season after next. It is going to 10. So there's not this kind of weird stage of having an uneven number. But obviously, you know, this was not the circumstances anyone would have wanted it to get to 10 teams, if indeed that was the intention. And Corbs, I've got to circle it back to London Irish and just your sort of your overview about how the fans and anyone connected to the club might be feeling. It's kind of bit of a waking up from a bit of a nightmare, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's been this, you know, feeling of impending doom that's been lingering for a while, just because it's just been so little positive news for so long, except for maybe one spark at one point in the media. And I think that had people dreading the worst, but sort of still only maybe emotionally invested, hoping for the best and just hoping there was some 11th hour shining white knight that could come save or fix this situation. And now that the reality has sunk in of what's going on, I think people are just gutted, because London Irish is quite a special club. It is a very much a family vibe. I think there's been so much shared experience from the fan base and those that follow the club over these last, say, 10, 20 years, from relegations to Premiership finals to amazing victories in the Champions Cup to all sorts of different things along the way. They've shared these experiences, and that's built quite a strong collective family-like vibe, from fans to players to staff to everything. And I just think it's just heartbreaking that that's what's kind of over now. And I think the way it's ended with a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths who love so much of the journey to this point, is a tough one to see it go out on this way. And, you know, I just wish that the players, you know, maybe had been a bit more transparent of what was going on, and the amount of time this was allowed to drag on, and the amount of stress and uncertainty and tough positions a lot of staff and fans and players were all put through, for me, it's just like a sad way to see it sort of to go out at the end. And I thought Mick's statement, you know, there's some heartfelt bits in there, but I also think it's kind of shedding any blame or anything as well, and pushing away. And I think, as I've said earlier, I think there's multiple areas that are to blame, and no one's immune from it, and no one's and no one's fully culpable for it. I think it's system failures, individual failures, and just it was allowed to go on and continue a way that, you know, isn't sustainable.
Absolutely. And just finally on you know, the staff, we got best wishes to all those staff who now will need to find new work. And for the players, it's going to be a bit of a Wasps and Worcester situation, isn't it? There'll be Henry Arundels and Tom Pearsons who'll be courted far and wide, and I imagine will be finding themselves in a new club before we know it. And then there'll be others who may have to consider their whole future in the sport. There will be that split in the playing group with, what, 50 plus players now looking for somewhere to play.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of those Irish players, from what I understood, were holding on to hopes that there was potentially going to be dispensation in the salary cap or something for them to be able to be picked up. But then now hearing, not confirmed, but hearing that that isn't the case, and that means it's going to be very hard for a lot of these players to, one, find a job, and two, if they do, it almost guarantees it's going to be at quite a significant pay cut. Because this is the other thing you have to consider. As more and more teams go down, there's less and less jobs available, but the player pool is still as ever big as it is. So that is going to compress wages for players in general, and just by the lack of opportunities out there and the amount of staff that are now, or players or staff, whatever, how you want to refer to them, are available, and it puts them, you know, in a tough position to all of a sudden, you know, you think you have a 2-year deal, you think you have stability, you think you know where you're going to live, you think you have a certain income, you might have had a mortgage based on that income, and now you're in a position where you're scrambling and may have to take 50% or if not less than what you're on just to keep money coming in or keep the dream alive. I think the last thing is because this is the final scrum down of the year, we won't be doing any more to follow this topic, and we've been covering it for a while, is kind of what the administration process could look like. I'm assuming, as I said earlier in the pod, the assets of the club will be, you know, liquidated. That is, to my knowledge, really Hazelwood, that development, and then also whatever the way that the P share is bought back off London Irish should raise enough money to pay HMRC, to pay back government loans, and then I assume the rest will pay back Mick the money he's put in plus the interest owed on those notes. And then after that, you've got, you know, people like players, and then after that, you'd have unsecured creditors like vendors. But I believe whatever revenue will be generated will probably stop at that first tier of creditors, that the government will get theirs first, and then Mick will recoup as much of the losses as he can, or much of the money in plus interest on top as he can. And then I assume with the way that the London Irish has been structured with Power Day and subsidiary and loans, that the additional losses or the deficit of what wasn't able to be made up will be put down as business losses in for tax purposes, is what I've sort of has been explained to me of how this process will go. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. And have you heard anything on the administration side?
I mean, I think that's a pretty comprehensive overview. I imagine that all the players and staff had now been made redundant. That's what happened at Wasps. That, I assume, is kind of just a fait accompli, sadly, of the administration process. And then the main thing for me is that the governing bodies continue to work with whatever remains of London Irish. Obviously, there's the amateur arm, which play at Hazelwood, which are down the pyramid. And then there's Wasps, who have their amateur arm. Worcester have an amateur arm as well, but there was obviously all this stuff with the owners of Six Ways and where they go. And, you know, that's a bit cloudy. Will they have to work their way up the pyramid? Do they keep the brand alive, a bit like London Welsh did when they merged with the London Welsh Druids and then have worked their way back up the pyramid to now sit, I think, in round about level 5. So there are options to keep London Irish alive. How and when and why and what form, we're not sure. And the thing is, the main thing for me, as we discussed through the pod, is look, if that brand remains, which we hope it does, and if the players, not the players, they will go, but if the supporters keep London Irish as, you know, their club through thick and thin, then maybe in 5 years' time they could be back. But there's a lot of water to go under, a lot of bridges before then, isn't there?
No, mate, and I agree. And I think when you look at the amateur club, you hope it continues. The worry I have is what's going to happen to the Hazelwood ground, and eventually that's their home and they have a lease to operate there. But if that is sold or whatever happens, then where does London Irish Amateur Club end up is still probably a question that needs to be answered. And then I think lastly, my point is, like, if we're talking about a restructuring, we're talking about recreating the second tier, a sustainable second tier, how can you not include three teams that probably will bring a minimum of 30,000 plus attendance to your league every weekend? Pretty much, you could say both those teams, if they came back, could get 10,000 fans, I believe. It's a no-brainer that these brands have to stay involved in the ecosystem. It's just sad that this has not been planned out, not been given the fail-safes and procedures along the way to now put them in such a terrible position. You know, we don't know how they're going to reincorporate or come back, but I just think business-wise alone, it would be silly if you're trying to create that Prem 2 as such that these clubs don't exist at all. It's just probably going to be like, what the financial buy-in, what are the criteria that they are if you need them to meet, and then what groups are able to actually ever find funds to get back into this game and get some of these things up and starting again.
Yeah, completely. And remember, Wasps had a place in the Championship. They weren't able to fulfill it. They didn't have the coaching, the players, the ground, or maybe they did have they had agreements of where they might play, but there wasn't enough reassurance for the RFU to go, right, you are in the Championship this season. And that's understandable. There's no point them rushing it. If it means taking another bit of time, so be it. If Mick Crossan and the family and the Power Day group that want to take their time to make sure that London Irish does not die completely, then that's maybe the least they could do. So it's a very tough time for everyone involved, as it has been for the Worcester fans. It's been a miserable season off the field, the darkest season. You can't sugarcoat it, as much as I think we've tried to put a bit of a, you know, look positively to the future. You can't sugarcoat how catastrophic it's been. And let's hope that in the fullness of time, these clubs are back in whatever guise, wherever they play, but with the same spirit and with the same fan base, you know, that we're seeing across social media, that we're seeing, you know, pour their hearts out about how much these clubs mean. It'd be absolutely, you know, it'd be awful if all of that passion and love for a club was lost forever. Let's hope it isn't.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to wrap it up, mate. Sad times for London Irish, but, you know, tiny slithers of hope that maybe there's some silver lining down the line, but hard to see or really visualize that right now where we're at, mate. Chris, thanks so much for your time and thanks for your contributions this season and our season finale. We really appreciate it, mate. Thanks so much.
No problem. Good to chat to you as always, Corbs.
And that is a wrap on this week's show and this season of shows. You know, it's been a huge slog, 40 episodes across this season. Couldn't have done it without the amazing work of our producer, Adam, from all of the support I get at NBC Sports, Tyreek, to everyone else that posts the shows, that helps, that support us. I really appreciate everything you do for us. And really, my big thank you is to you, all the listeners and viewers, all the support we've had. You know, a bit of a one-man band here with this podcast. Another huge thank you has to go to all of my guests as well who have contributed across the season. Couldn't have done it without you as well. And just thank you for the support. The pod will be back next season around the World Cup. So stay tuned across my social medias as I'll keep you updated on when and where this pod will be back. But for all your support, thanks so much. We'll see you again next season.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.